Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of A Place in the Conversation. We're very glad to have you join us today. My name is Dan Neiswanger, and I'm joined by my good friend Nick Everhart and by my good friend Pastor Anna Lee Coringle. She's the pastor of Unionville Presbyterian Church. Nick, you want to say hello?
Yes, hello. Dan, it's nice to be here with you and Anna Lee. I always look forward to these conversations. I always learn something and enjoy the exchange.
Thank you. Anna Lee, you want to say hello?
Hello, everybody. Just glad to be here. Thank you for asking me, Dan. I always enjoy conversations with you.
Good, good, great. And so, you know, do you want to spend just a little bit of time talking about your church? And because we haven't invited you here to talk about your church, we're making a place in the conversation today to talk about a secondary gig that you have, where you serve as the chaplain for some of our local police departments, because I think that is utterly fascinating. So why don't you take a few moments and talk a little bit about Unionville Presbyterian Church, share a little bit about that, how long you've been there, and then we'll get to the meat of our conversation as we talk about what you do with the police departments.
Thanks, Dan. So I've been the pastor of Unionville Presbyterian Church. It's a PCUSA church. I've been there for, it'll be 11 years in September. And for a year before that, I served as the student pastor, so 12 years, or the student intern. It's an amazing, a small congregation, but amazing, so generous. They have a baking ministry, which actually started out because of my work as a police chaplain. Every week we deliver between 5 and 10 trays of homemade baked goods to police departments, fire departments, local nonprofits in the area. It's just an incredibly generous church, and I am so happy to be there. I don't feel called to be anywhere else but there with them.
Good. That's fantastic. And I've spent some time there with some of the leadership, and honestly, when I'm there with them, I feel the same way. Like, it's an amazing group of people who are looking to find a way to make a difference in their world. And that's always exciting, to be with people who have that that sense of passion and that sense of energy. So that's really cool. So talk with us a little bit about your role as a police chaplain. How many police departments do you work with? And what does a police chaplain do?
So I'm affiliated with 5 departments officially: Kennett Township, Southern Chester County Regional, Kennett Square, West County Scotian Regional, and East Fallowfield Police Departments. But then other police departments that don't have their own chaplains will call me, so I go out on calls for other departments. And then I have been working with the coroner's office as well. I went to seminary thinking I would be a firehouse chaplain. I didn't intend on being a parish minister, because I'd been in EMS, I'd been an EMT and a firefighter, but Chester County has a really great and amazing fire chaplain. They didn't need another one. And I have some law enforcement in my congregation, and it just seemed like a really natural fit. And my job as a chaplain, there's different components of it. Some of it's ceremonial, being in parades, doing swearing-ins, funerals, baptisms, weddings, that kind of thing. Some of it's being a liaison with the community. If the police run into somebody that's experiencing homelessness or hungry or some other issues that aren't police-related, they'll call me and I can step in and assist the person. And the bulk of what I do and what I feel called to do is actually supporting the officers with their mental health and their wellness. They have a saying to each other, like, hey, yeah, you know, everybody gets home. And when we go out on calls, hey, everybody's going to get home. That's my promise to you, brother. Everybody's going to get home. And my promise is you're going to get home whole. Like, that's the piece that I bring in, the emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual piece of it.
So what does that mean? So there's a difference there, like, so that you're adding one word, and that changes everything. It kind of or it adds a whole nother layer anyway. You're going to get home, and then you're going to get home whole. What does that mean for you?
means that I want my guys to address the trauma that they see every day, because I think that makes them better cops, and I think it makes them happier, whole people. I believe that we were created for wholeness, for shalom, for this sense of well-being and peace and health, more than just physical health. I think it's, you know, the emotional, physical, spiritual, mental component of it. So I want my guys to go home whole. I want them to address the trauma. I want them to feel free to talk about things. Hey, that call didn't go so great, and here's how I'm feeling about it. Or this is a really upsetting thing that's happened, and I want to talk about it. And I just really want them to be able to see that there are resources out there. Even if I'm not the resource, I can be the gate. Like, I can find them the resource. They can talk to me and say, this is what I'm experiencing. And if it's out of my league, I can say, oh, I have a whole file of, hey, this is a great person for you to talk to. I found therapists and doctors who work just with law enforcement. That's their specialty. So I can refer out to somebody.
So how many calls do you end up going on, just say, in, and it's a hard question to answer probably, but just say on a month, like what's an average month look like for you?
So I stop by the departments twice a month, usually to drop off goodies or just to pop in and be a face, like, hey, how's everything going? And I do that so I can kind of establish baselines. I can get to know you, so I can be like, oh, Dan, you seem, you know, this is who you are. And then the next time I'm in, I can think, this isn't quite Dan. This doesn't feel right. Hey, let's go for a ride along. Hey, you want to grab a cup of coffee? So I'm in a couple times a month just without being called. And then it takes a while to build up trust with that community. And so once that happens and they start reaching out to me for their own personal stuff, I get a lot of phone calls in the middle of the night. And then when things happen, they'll call me and I'll actually leave the house and meet them to do a death notification, so that they can go and investigate the crime and I can stay there and support the family, or to come out because, you know, something's just not gone well and somebody doesn't need the warrior cop. They need the social worker chaplain. So
Yeah.
Probably go out about 10 times a month for those, but a lot of middle of the night phone calls just to chat, which is fine.
And so how did you find yourself in this role?
So funnily enough, I had he's retired now, but I had a chief of police in my congregation, and I, again, had gone to seminary thinking I'd be a firehouse chaplain, and then ended up through a series of, it's a whole other conversation, ending up in parish ministry, but still wanted to do this chaplain piece, and had this police chief in my congregation. I thought, like, this is perfect. So I kept calling him and calling him, and he would never call me back. And then I happened to be at a CACS event, Kennett Area Community Services, and the police chief, the former police chief of Kennett Township, happened to be at that same event, and he and I got talking. And he said, he was new, and he said, hey, I'd like to develop a police chaplain policy. Would you help me write the policy? I said, oh, sure. So I helped him write the policy. And then as we were writing the policy, he realized I could do it. And I realized I could do it. And then I wanted to do it. So he said, hey, do you want to do this? I said, sure. And that was Kennett Township. And then when it made the news, the police chief in my department comes in carrying the newspaper. He's like, hey, why wouldn't you come to my department? I said, well, I called you like six times. He said, oh, well, I thought you wanted me to be a deacon, so I never called you back. But I now do serve. He's retired now, but I did end up serving his department.
His department as well. Good. So what are some of the, what's some of the most challenging stuff that you find as you do this work?
I would have to say it's certainly the public perception of I'm very protective of my guys. I call them my guys, and I'm very protective of them. And there are absolutely some not great police officers in the world, in the country. We've seen that. And no cop that I know that I work for thinks that what happened was to George Floyd was good. They were all just as outraged as we are. The difference is they're all painted with that same brush. Like, one bad cop they all get painted by that. And there's plenty of bad pastors out there too, but people don't ask me to answer for that. Yeah. Like, I don't have to, you know, if you were a bad pastor, Dan, nobody would say like, oh, well, that Dan's a terrible pastor, so you must be too. And so it's being painted with that broad brush. So I feel like I do a lot of defending, and that takes a toll on them. But I feel like I do a lot of defending of like, hey, you know, did you ever have somebody, a bad apple in your profession? And did that make you bad? Well, no. Well, this is kind of the same thing.
Kind of the same thing. Yeah.
That's sort of interesting you mentioned that, because I'm just thinking that a lot of Catholic priests probably get painted with a pretty broad brush. So maybe you're in a fortunate position. So I was wondering, you know, I'm familiar with the image that many people have of the police. I was in graduate school in Berkeley when a lot of student protesters were shot by police, and everyone referred to the police as pigs, the pigs. And I always hated that term, and I always sort of felt some empathy for the police who are out there often afraid for their lives and had to make some bad decisions. And you've touched on that by what you say, that, you know, they're not all bad. But how do you help your guys? And I don't know, do you have any women that you...
We do, but they're still all my guys.
Okay, that's fine.
Probably politically incorrect, which is surprising coming from me, but I refer to them all as my guys.
So how do they deal with that?
It takes a toll on them, definitely takes a toll on them. And one of the things is that there's not little kids that grow up wanting to be cops. It's getting harder and harder to staff, which means they're running short. They're working extra hours. So it takes like an actual toll as far as having to fill shifts. And, you know, because it's not like, well, I don't work at Walmart, but if you call out at Walmart, I'm assuming the store is not going to collapse. Right. Like, you know, if one person doesn't show up, well, if one cop doesn't show up, that can leave somebody alone on the street trying to cover their territory. And so, you know, when we're seeing that there's just kids aren't wanting to be cops, and that's taking a toll on my guys, because they're the ones that are left and are trying to do a really good job. And the ones that I know got into it because they wanted to do something good. They wanted to give back. They have a sense of right and wrong, and that they wanted to do something to protect and serve. They take that oath really seriously. When I'm there at swearing-ins, those guys take that really seriously. Mm. And we ask them to do something that most of us wouldn't do. I mean, I'm a pacifist. There's no way I'm going to, like, if somebody barged in here right now with a gun, it would be up to you two to do something, because I'm not going to. Yeah. You know, so we asked them to do a pretty tough job that not a lot of people would do. And you know, even a traffic stop with a little lady that you think is going to be fine could be the one that ends your career and you don't go home. Like, they just, every call, they have to go with that heightened sense of vigilance, and their adrenaline's dumping and their cortisol's dumping and their heart rate's going up and their blood's constricting. All the stuff that our bodies were created to do, that fight, flight, or freeze, that's only supposed to last about 30 seconds. We're only supposed to live in that for 30 seconds, enough to decide, is it safest to fight, to fly, or to freeze? Like, what's the best, and then do it. Well, they live in that constantly, and that takes a huge toll.
They have to decide faster than that.
Right, but they live in that constantly of, like, everything is a fight, flight, or freeze.
You know, when I stepped away from ministry for about 6 years and moved down to Charlotte, North Carolina, one of the jobs that I applied for and actually progressed through the first few stages of was to be a police officer for the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department. And I made it through the first couple of stages.
I bet you
did. They got talking to one of the guys, the recruiter who was working with me, and the question he asked me that ended my whole process was, if something was happening, would you be able to pull the gun, pull the trigger, take the life? And I said, well, you know. And he goes, no, that's not a will you know question. He goes, if you can't answer that yes, then you're not no. And because every situation you walk into is just so filled. He goes, so you need to really wrestle with that. And I was kind of excited about it, because I was going to be able to use some of my pastoral background in the police department. And I finally got to this place where it was like, yeah, you know what? they're asking me to do something that I don't know that I would be able to do. And so I just have a lot of respect for, you know, for what they do each and every day. Because I wasn't able to answer the question.
Right. And I couldn't. Yeah. And I believe it's a calling, just like you and I were called to ministry. I believe that it's that people are called to police officer, that it is a vocation. It is a calling from God.
It is. Yeah. 100%. Yeah, I agree. So how do you balance the, I'm the police chaplain for 6 different departments, right? Like I could write that up and say, hey, that's a job description for a full-time job, right? And I'm also the pastor of Unionville Presbyterian Church. That's a full-time job. How do you navigate these 2 career things that really could be full-time jobs in and of themselves? How do you balance that?
I've never been somebody that sleeps a lot, so that's part of it. And I can, I guess because of my years doing EMS, I can wake up, I have an instant on. The phone rings, I'm up. Sometimes my guys will say, you're already dressed, aren't you? Like, and then I can go back to sleep very quickly. So there's that. My church loves that I do this, and they're very supportive of it. They always have been. They consider it part of what they've called me to do. So I feel really lucky. And then because it is a volunteer basis, I mean, there are, you know, I would have to weigh if 2 calls came in at the same time, I would have, you know, obviously if it was a church call, I'd have to prioritize that one, I think. But it would depend. It's just weighing every situation, deciding, does this need me to come out? Can it wait till tomorrow? Is it just a phone call that we can talk on the phone? But I feel luckily, I can't think of any time that, you know, I've gotten 2 calls at the same time. The universe seems to work it out so that there's space in between, but I feel really lucky to do both jobs, and all my police chiefs, and then certainly the session I serve at my church, they're all very supportive and encouraging.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's interesting you said that you have 2 jobs. You're also a mom.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, I would say that's 3 jobs.
It is. It is. My kids have grown up with this. The boys are out of the house. My daughter's finishing up her junior year in high school. They've grown up with this, and they're very supportive. My favorite story is, it was a sad, horrible story, but it kept me, basically, I was out for about 36 hours. I remember falling asleep on my way home. I knew I couldn't make it home, and I was less than 10 miles from the house, but I knew I couldn't make it home, and I pulled into the Northbrook Marketplace and slept for 20 minutes. Like, I knew I couldn't even make it home. But when I got home, my daughter had, she had Reese's peanut butter cups, water. She'd made up the guest bed. She'd put up like fairy lights around. I mean, it was just, she had a blanket for me. She had water. She had Reese's peanut butter cups. She was little, and she wrote this note like, I know it's been a long call for you, and I'm sure you're really tired. And so I made up this room for you, and the dogs are with me so they won't bark. And I mean, it was just really sweet. And I was like, oh, right, that's why I do this, because I feel very supported by my family and my congregation and my cops.
Yeah, that's very cool. You know, Annalee, other times that you and I have talked about calling, right, and giftedness, and one of the things that you've said is that times of difficulty, times of hardship, times that most people would run away from or shrink away from, that, you know, you said, hey, that's my wheelhouse. Like, that's what I'm good at. I'm good in those seasons, and I'm good at helping people navigate those seasons. Talk about that for a little bit.
Oh, gosh. I want to be the rock star singer. I want to be an amazing preacher. Like, those are the things that I really wanted to be when I was in seminary. Like, that's what I wanted, you know, I was like, God, use me for that. And I was working as a chaplain at AI DuPont. It was part of my seminary training. We had to do a clinical pastoral education piece. So I worked for a year there, and I was on the oncology and the transplant units. And most kids leave AI DuPont. 95% of those kids leave, but not on my ward. And I had little kids at the time, and I had this amazing, amazing supervisor. He was so good. I would beg. I'm like, just put me in orthopedics. Let me deal with the kids with broken arms. He's like, no, you're going to be good where you are. I would see one family a day and I'd spend the rest of the day like crying or throwing up. It was horrible. And then we had a case where a woman wouldn't, her baby had died and she wouldn't let him go. And babies, you need to take them away pretty quickly. And I spent close to 18 hours negotiating with her and talking to her, because I happened to be the one on call and nobody else, you know, I had to do it and did it. And it was horrible and awful. And I was really good at it. Like, she gave me that baby. And I remember telling my boss, my supervisor, he's like, you were really good at that. Like, that was a really dark place. And you are the person who you are called to be in dark places. I'm like, yeah, I'd rather be like the rock star preacher. He's like, but God has gifted you and called you to be the person in the dark places. And once I lived into that, those places bring me joy, not in the sense that somebody else is going through a tragedy. It's that like, oh, this, it's that joy or peace of knowing this is what I was created to do. I wasn't created to be that rock star singer, that amazing preacher. God bless my congregation. They tolerate my mediocre preaching every week. But like, that's what I was created to do. And I'm really good at it. And once I leaned into that and accepted that in myself, it was like, oh yeah, this is what I was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And so that comes into, you know, when you see me on your door in my chaplain's uniform, chances are you're not going to have a good day. You're not having, you're like, I'm not there because you've won the publisher's clearinghouse sweepstakes. But I'm really good at that piece of it. I'm the one you want there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's truth in that. And I think, you know, as you're everybody who's listening, and I think one of the takeaways for today is that, you know, sometimes we have a vision of ourselves, right? We've created a script of who we're going to be, who we want to be. And if we're not living into that script, then we think that there's something wrong. But the challenge, the opportunity, the gift is whenever we live into the reality of who God has created us to be. And whenever you live into that, then it's like, man, you're set free. Because you're no longer trying to be something that you're just not going to be. Because you don't have the skill set for it. It's not in your DNA as a person. And second of all, you're using the gifts that you've been given. And so you start living and moving and breathing as the person God has created you to be. And all of a sudden, life just looks better. It feels different because it's, wow, this is who I am. This is, I'm using the gifts and talents that I've been given. And I'm not chasing after something that, yeah, I could spend decades trying to get better at this, that, and the other thing. And I might achieve some success at it. But nothing compared to, you know, stepping into the truth of who I have been created to be. And I just think it's beautiful. You know, a lot of you know that, that I'm struggling through my cancer journey stuff. And, you know, I have connected Anna Lee with my family. And there will come a day, when she will be right there. Because I know that she does good in dark places. And she will be an encouragement and a support.
And I will be honored to be part of their journey.
Yeah, and you will be. And you will be there. And I'm just, it brings me great peace and comfort. To know that is truth. Nick, you look like you have a thought or a question.
No, I'm just sort of moved by the conversation in many ways. But I guess I was thinking, you know, you talked about being whole, and you talked about mental and emotional and spiritually whole. And I guess I wonder, in your work with the police officers themselves, how do you address this spiritual part without crossing the,
So I guess you'd have to ask them. I think I'm pretty good at that piece. I know that I am a Christian and that's what works for me. I've never believed that that was the only way to be. And I always tell them, because I usually show up wearing a collar. I try very hard to make sure that I'm not, because, you know, I wear a police jacket and I have a badge. And sometimes in the middle of the chaos, people will think I'm a police officer. I'm like, no, no. So I always wear the collar and I try and, you know, delineate myself. But I'm very clear that, and I always say this, like, it's your, I happen to be a Christian, but it's your faith that matters now. And most people, you know, will say, oh, I don't believe in God. Okay, well, tell me about that God you don't believe in, and we'll go from there. Or they'll say, like, oh, well, I'm Muslim, I'm Hindu, and I have great resources I can call and say, like, oh, you know what, I actually know an imam, I actually know a Hindu priest, I know some rabbis, let me sit with you for this moment, but I can get you somebody else. So I'm very clear that Christianity is my path, but it may not be theirs, and that's okay. And that's okay. God is found in the midst of all of that. And God's there before I ever show up. All I'm doing is sometimes being that visible reminder that something greater than themselves is there.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, thank you.
So, Annalee, as you think about this, as you think about your role as a chaplain for these, you know, for these police departments, what would you want to share with the wider community and say how they could be supportive, how they could be encouraging, how, you know, we live in a world of tension right now, right? We live in a world that is, we're not very good at having conversations. We're not very good at supporting each other. What would you say to kind of maybe help fight against that a little bit?
Recognize the humanity under the badge. We are all more than what we do. We are created, we are human beings, not human doings. Recognize the human being that's under the badge. Recognize that there's a person under there that may be having a really terrible day and you don't know what happened. Maybe their mom just died and they had to come to work anyway. I mean, during COVID, I saw my guys having to make choices of, do I go into the hospital when my wife delivers her baby, knowing that if I do, before we knew very much about COVID, I'm going to have to take 2 weeks off because I may have been exposed and I can't expose the rest of the force to this. Like, do I go in and be with my wife, leaving the force short-staffed? What, you know, so there's humanity under that badge, and you just don't know what somebody's day has been like. And again, just don't use the broad brush.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go, people. I mean, I think that's a good word, right? See the humanity. And it's something that I've been working on and trying to be able to think through in my own life for the past couple of years, is to be able to recognize that often whenever something is happening and taking place, you know, my gut reaction is to say, well, there you go. They're doing it to me. And the truth is probably not. They're probably not thinking about me at all. They probably had a really hard day at home before they left the house. They probably got some news that they didn't want to hear. There's, you know, probably an argument that took place that they wish that they could take back. There's probably worry and fear about something that's looming in the future that they don't feel they have any control over. And I just happen to be in the path. And so I get to experience some of the emotion that they're looking to pass on and to get rid of. And I miss when I focus on that, I miss people's humanity. So a good closing word for all of us in every encounter we have with people. Let's focus on the humanity and let's try to see through all the drama, all the trauma, all the anxiety, and really get to see the human being that is there in front of us. And as we do that, we'll be able to love each other in a way that sets captives free. So Annalee, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Nick, for being with us. And until next time, everybody, may you just be abundantly aware of the Spirit of God alive and well, and at work in your world.